You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show post-game edition, and what a day of games it was. Ari and I are coming to you right after the Ohio State-Penn State game has finished up. Utah currently throttling UCLA at about halftime. They're winning 28-10. We had two undefeated teams go down today. Now, we knew one would because Michigan and Michigan State were playing, and Michigan State with a big win against Michigan, which, I mean, for most of the game, it didn't feel like it could happen, but they kept chopping. And then SMU goes down at Houston. So it's going to be really interesting. The College Football Playoff Committee having their first meeting. They're probably sitting there in Grapevine, Texas, watching those games. Ari, I don't know what they're going to do because I tried to do a top four. Mine sucks.
Yeah, It's going to be a struggle, and I think what I think the top four teams are and what they're going to be are going to be different. And the hardest part about this, Andy, is deciphering the difference between who is most deserving and who in our hearts we think are the four best teams in college football. And in my opinion, those things are very, very different. And also, once you get through pass number one, which is clearly Georgia on everybody's list, you could make a case for five other teams to be number two.
Oh, I could make a case for six other teams to be number two. I have a top seven that I will read and everybody will get mad about it, but I don't know how to separate two through seven. Well, I don't know what order to put them in.
Why don't we just share ours first and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. All right. So Ari, you go ahead with your, how many?
I did
how
six.
Many top whatever?
I did six in a row.
Okay, so you did six.
I mean, right. I don't know how dramatic you want to be. We can go one by one, or we can do them all at once.
I want you to start with one because that's the one that's not a surprise.
Okay, my number. We can do it like the actual playoff show. Reveal number one, and then start from six.
Okay.
Okay, my number go one is my number one's Georgia. Clearly the best team in college football. What they're doing to teams, I can't remember watching at any point. And I know there's recency bias, and that's real. But the way Georgia plays the game, it's almost just demoralizing for whoever they're playing. And it's a beautiful brand of football.
I mean, they annihilated Florida today. Yeah. Florida's lost four games, but Florida's not a terrible team. They just annihilated them.
Georgia makes everybody look helpless, even very talented opposing teams. And I'm very excited to see them play Alabama and what that'll look like, or once they start playing some teams with high-powered offenses and, you know, that are functional. Because even Florida, even though they have a lot of talent on their roster, I don't know if their offensive game plan or strategy is functional, you know, and changing roster quarterbacks and, you know, trying to get through it. It's just, you know, it's just not like playing Alabama. But I feel bad for the opponents that are playing Georgia.
I do too. These are some good, like when Arkansas played them, they made Arkansas look inept.
Completely
inept. And Arkansas has been quite inept against everybody else they've played.
And what I think is kind of funny too, Andy, is that like in a world where right now these college football playoff debates are going to be off the craziness that we've seen very few of in the past few years, I think it's possible that we might just argue our way to the top four, get to the top four, and then Georgia just wins the national championship.
Maybe, but I will argue that the discussion we're having right now, the issues we're having putting the teams in order, this is a good thing. Because normally, well, I say normally, but in the last few years, it has felt like there's been separation at this point. I other than one to two, I don't feel a ton of separation. So do you want to go with your number six now?
Okay. My number six is Oklahoma.
Okay.
And the reason why, and like, this is really hard too, because, you know, you try to put yourself in the position of the committee where you're weighing losses and whatever, but Oklahoma to me has looked fractured all year. And I know that Caleb Williams is the savior, and if they go undefeated and win the Big 12, there's absolutely no chance that they don't make the playoff. But in my mind, I'm not necessarily sure that I believe that they're actually one of the four best teams in college football, even if they haven't lost yet. So, like, I struggled with the idea of no losses and what you feel. So,
right.
You know, and then that I actually might be a little bit inconsistent with what I feel in my own bracket, because my number five, I'll just go through my list. My number five is Ohio State. I think they might be the second best team or the third best team in college football in my heart. And I'm leaving them out of the playoff discussion until they beat Michigan State and continue on with what they have ahead, because they rattled through a bunch of crappy teams. They struggled mightily, couldn't score touchdowns in the red zone against Penn State, even though I think Penn State does a very good job of playing Ohio State tough. I think I even told you they'll win by 10 after this slosh fest, and they won by 9. You know, I told you in the second quarter, it's the same game every year, and James Franklin deserves a hell of a lot of credit, and I think he's worth his money at Penn State just because he plays Ohio State the way that he does. But I'm putting Ohio State out of the top five because they've lost, and they also didn't look great against the first good team they've played, or quasi-good team they've played since
Oregon. They also have an opportunity to beat a currently undefeated team and a Michigan team that may only have one loss when they play.
Yes.
So all of that can come out in the wash. Who's your number four?
So my number four is Michigan State. And this is where I'm inconsistent, and I can just admit it because it's just hard. But I think Ohio State and Oklahoma are better than Michigan State. But Michigan State has earned it. Beating coming back from a 30-14 deficit at home, having one of the most electrifying players in college football score 5 touchdowns on your home field, controlling your own destiny in the Big Ten, and also historically being a team that's given Ohio State trouble when things are going well, I think they earn the benefit of the doubt to at least begin in the top four as an unbeaten team with a pretty solid resume. My number three is Cincinnati.
Who's your number three? Okay.
And Cincinnati, to me, is they've done everything that they can do possible in order to put themselves in a position where a group of five teams actually going to get in. And in a year like this, this is when they can do it. And Notre Dame beating North Carolina by 10, I told myself that what Notre Dame does, and this is going to be the way the committee thinks, I'm assuming too, because Cincinnati is very anchored by the quality of win that is. Notre Dame beating a pretty good North Carolina team by 10 helps buoy their resume. Now,
I find this very interesting because you're talking about Cincinnati's best win, a great win on the road that isn't as good as somebody else's win on the road. And I don't think that somebody else is your number two.
Yeah. And I know. And like, that's the thing. Like, Oregon is what you're referring to, right? And
unless your number two is Oregon, and no, if your number two is Oregon, that means you're leaving somebody else out.
My number two is Alabama. And like, you could just like throw a rock at my top six and it just comes crumbling down. And like, I'll sit here right now and admit it. But like, Oregon to me is the clear number seven best team in my heart when we're looking at this. And
okay,
I know that might not
make sense.
Well,
let me ask you a question then, Ari. Why did they bother playing a game in Columbus on September 11th? Why didn't they just simulate it on a computer?
The same reason why they played the Texas A&M Bama game. I mean, teams lose to teams that are worse than all the time.
Okay, but Texas A&M has two losses. They're not the same.
No, I know, but
comparison
in college football, like it or not, good teams lose to worse teams all the time. And I get that Oregon at this point has the head to head win against Ohio State. And frankly speaking, if Oregon does what we bet on and goes undefeated for the rest of the year and finishes the season as a one-loss Pac-12 champion with a win over Ohio State, and it comes down to Ohio State, who's a one-loss Big Ten champion, I would have no problem putting Oregon in. So, like, the good news is about these rankings is that it's the first one.
So you're going to be like the committee in 2014, which ignored Baylor beating TCU head-to-head for the first few weeks, and then in the last week they remembered, oh yeah, Baylor beat TCU, so we should have them ahead of TCU.
Because everything's with context. I mean, you do the best that you can in the moment with the information that you have. And as you get more context, you're like this thing in America that I don't understand is if you say something or feel something one day and then you get more information 3 weeks later, it's like you're banned from changing your mind. You know what I mean? And I'm absolutely in a position where I can change my mind about Oregon. And what they did against Ohio State, I think that everybody who watched the game knows that the Ohio State team that exists today is not the Ohio State team that they beat. And I think that the committee takes that into account. I take that into account.
Yeah, the Ohio State team that exists today is the one that got pushed by a team that lost at home last week to Illinois.
Yeah, no, I know. But like, what do you think the spread would be if Oregon and Ohio State played again tomorrow? It'd probably be like 16, 17.
But the game happened. They played in Oregon. They did,
yeah. So no, I know. And you could, and like, I'm very curious. And listen, I don't feel strongly enough. Like, if you wanted to say swap Oregon and put them five and drop Ohio State and Oklahoma down a spot, like, I wouldn't lose sleep over that. I could get on board with that.
We'll be right back after these words.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Okay, let's go to mine. And that is why mine is a top seven and not a top six. But it is just as weakly constructed as yours beyond number one. Like,
because I don't think there's anybody who can do this list
in almost any way.
Is anybody who does this list able to get a top seven with no inconsistencies?
No, absolutely not. And again, this is a great conversation. This conversation means that there are more teams really in the mix that have a legitimate chance of making the playoff this year than there have been in previous years. This is good. This is great to hear. I don't know. I'm not sure if there's anybody beyond this seven that has a chance. Maybe there is. Maybe there's somebody down a little bit further. But I'm excited that we're having this conversation, and it's not just we're already down to five. Because right now, I'm confident in my number one, and I could rearrange two through seven any way you want to. So
I'm with
I'll
you.
Start now. I've got Georgia number one. I have Oklahoma number seven for the same reasons you have Oklahoma number six. I get big 2014 Florida State vibes off that team. And I just feel like at some point they're going to trip up. But they're still winning, so I will give them the benefit of the doubt. And the thing is, if they keep winning, and especially if they win more impressively, then I have no qualms about just moving them up. So I'm good with that. Number six, Ohio State. This one shook my confidence in Ohio State, this Penn State game. Mm-hmm. Like, how can you not run against a team that Illinois ran all over last week? Like, until that Travion Henderson big run down the sideline, they couldn't move the ball at all on the ground. They were awful in the red zone. Like, there's a lot of red flags with this team that I was just ignoring that really we all should have. And we talked about them after the Oregon game, but then we just forgot them because they were blowing out, you know, the Big Ten's cannon fodder.
Well, can I just interject on something here?
Cannon fodder. What's that?
I'm going to interject on something here. And listen, everybody knows my history covering Ohio State. And maybe that clouds the way I view things at times. But last year when Ohio State went to the playoff and played for a national championship, they struggled at home, I think. Were they on the road last year? They're on the road last year. They beat Penn State by 13. And it was the only game Correct. They struggled in. And I know that was a weird year. But
they struggled against Northwestern for part of the championship.
Yeah,
game,
but if you go back, and the year before in 2019, which was one of the best Ohio State teams I've ever seen, they beat Penn State 28-17. I think okay. if you keep going back in 2018, they won 27-26.
Team's not as good as those.
I'm just saying, historically speaking, no coach in college football has been able to muddle a game and make things so ugly for Ohio State every single time they play.
Okay, and but Penn here, State and here's did the that thing about again. All of this.
They do it every year.
Ohio State still has Michigan State and still has Michigan on the schedule. If they beat those teams, and I'm not even saying if they beat those teams handily, if they beat those teams, they will be in the top four. They will make the playoff. Period.
Yeah, I mean, they probably will. I'm very curious.
Regardless
if
of where anybody has them right now, they will make the playoff if they beat those teams.
Because they'll get the credit for beating a top five team in Michigan State when and if that happens. But my point is that even though this game was ugly and Ohio State had six red zone trips and had one touchdown and, you know, it was what it was, it literally is the same game every single year. And I don't know that it's an indication that Ohio State's not very good. I think that James Franklin and Penn State deserves a lot of credit for consistently playing that game tough. And they've played them tough in years where Ohio State had generationally good teams. So when I watch that game, if you're an Ohio State fan, I can see how frustrating that is. And if you're the rest of the country, you might say, hey, look, Ohio State sucks. They playing a pretty good team for the first time and they can't run the ball. And it's just like anybody who watched that game saw like 9 penalties before the snap. Like they were playing on sand. They went to the red zone. They had miscommunications. They didn't play their best game. And, you know, frankly speaking, I don't think that this is an indication that they're not a very good football team. Now, they might be flawed, you know, but I think that everybody else is too.
I didn't say they weren't good. I said they were flawed. And
yeah, well, they definitely are flawed.
Isn't that what we're doing is parsing these teams' flaws? But here's my thing. So I've got Oregon at number 5. If we're going to prop Cincinnati up with one win on the road, then we can damn sure prop Oregon up with one better win on the road.
Yeah, that's true. Who do you think would win if they played?
Toss-up. I think it's a pick'em.
Yeah, and it's funny because I use that as a rationale when Oregon beat Ohio State.
If Cincinnati and Ohio State played, I think Cincinnati could beat them on the right day.
Like, I think if you watch Ohio State
play, Ohio State would be favored, but Cincinnati could beat them. Given the right circumstances,
Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia are the only three teams, in my opinion, in this discussion that can beat all the other ones.
I would agree with that.
You know, so, like, well, whether they will and whether they'll make the playoff. Listen, Ohio State lost the benefit of the doubt. You lose to Oregon at home without their best player. If you put yourself in a position where you're going to be compared directly to Oregon at the end of this whole thing, and Oregon has a similar resume and one head to head, then Ohio State doesn't get to go. That's the way this works. If you lose the one game you can't lose, you don't go.
Right.
But as we sit here now.
It's the 2015 Ohio State thing, where 2015 Ohio State might have been the best team in the country, did not make the playoff because they lost to Michigan State.
The only team on their schedule they couldn't have lost to.
Right. So number 4, I've got Alabama. And I put them there for the same reason you put them number 2. I think they'd beat these other teams. That's it. Yeah. They don't have... Their best win is Ole Miss, and it was a very nice win, but
do you see what you're doing too? You're doing the same thing that I did, where you're creating a list, and it makes sense based on what you're thinking. But like, here's the thing: on some rankings, we use criteria and resume, and then on other rankings, we use gut feeling and thought of what we feel. And you know, I think the number one thing with the committee that is frustrating for fans and even frustrating for reporters is that when they put together their top fours, the criteria seems to change for all the teams that are involved. And that's what we're doing here because it's an impossible
task. The difference is we'll admit it. We're sitting here admitting that we're judging teams differently. But the fact of the matter is,
how would you rank them if it was just resume?
If it was just resume, I would have Alabama behind Oregon and maybe Ohio State.
Yeah, but I just don't even know how you would. So it's like in your mind, if you're just ranking them, then Georgia would be 1 and Oregon would be 2 because they've got the best win out of everybody in the country.
This is true. They have the best one win, and then but
they also
have
one of the worst losses
wins.
Too.
I mean, Cincinnati's got a really good win. Michigan State now has a really good win. So all right, so I'll just run through the rest of mine so I can we can keep moving on this. But I have Cincinnati at 3. I have Michigan State at 2, and obviously Georgia at 1. So that's where I'm at.
Okay, so let's just say what we think now is going to happen, because that's different. I think people might be more interested in that. What I think is going to be the ranking, what I think the rankings are going to be on Tuesday, number one, Georgia, number two, Alabama, number three, Ohio State, number four, Oklahoma, number five, Cincinnati, number six, Oregon, and number seven, Michigan State.
I think that sounds about right. And again, my two through seven, I could reorder any way. You could make an argument to have me reorder that in any way, and I'd be like, sure, okay, sounds good to me. I don't envy the committee having to do this. Now, the good news is for all of this, the Big Ten East teams are going to play each other. That's going to work itself out. Alabama is going to have to play the rest of its schedule, which includes, at this point, Arkansas and Auburn. The Auburn one's really interesting, I think, because I thought Auburn looked really good against Ole Miss on Saturday night. And I know Matt Corral hurt his ankle, but this was, look, Auburn's tough. Auburn's a tough place to play. They could be a better team now than they were tonight, or they could be a better team at the end of the season than they were tonight. Like, they could beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl, and we're not even having this discussion. Auburn's still got to play Texas A&M, by the way. So that could be just a fascinating situation going forward with Alabama. And then Alabama, of course, is going to have to play Georgia if they make the SEC championship game. Georgia, we know, will be in the SEC championship game because thanks to Mississippi State's win against Kentucky, Georgia has now clinched the East.
My head is spinning.
It's a good problem. It is a good problem to have that all of these teams are in the mix, because we needed more new blood and more blood, period. So the fact that Oregon's got, the fact that Oklahoma feels like it's got a little work to do, that's fine. Like, that's great.
It's like funny because if you rank them by resume, the ranking's different. If you rank them by who you think is most deserving, that's different, because resume and deserving, because you have to also take into account losses. And I think what's happened in the college football playoff rankings is that losses get dismissed because valuable wins are worth more in the eyes of the committee than bad losses or even losses in general. So it's just like that's the reason why
they don't like bad losses, like really, really bad losses.
They don't like
losses.
Blowout losses or bad losses.
Yeah. But they do, you're right. Good wins are more important to them than anything else.
Because it's like Alabama. They don't have the greatest resume. They got beaten pretty handily by Texas A&M. Texas A&M took that game from them.
They were
handily
winning the game with
But what I mean is that it wasn't like it was a weird loss where things weren't going well. Like, they just got straight up beaten. You know what I mean? Like, if the committee can go back and watch the Ohio State-Oregon game and say, was weird. This was kind of weird. Ohio State was discombobulated. The best player on their team wasn't a big factor yet. You know, like, Alabama A&M.
The committee can say the Oregon-Ohio State. Oregon beat Ohio State without its best player.
No, I know. But I think the committee could and will say that the Ohio State team that lost that game is not what they are today. They will. You watch it.
Say the same thing about Alabama if they want to.
Yeah, I know. But like, the Alabama loss. Do you see the distinction I'm making, though? Like, the Alabama loss.
There's no distinction.
No,
they
think
both
that, like,
lost.
Like, A&M beat Alabama when Alabama was like at its best. You know what I mean?
Absolutely not. That's not Alabama at its best.
I don't.
That
think...
was Alabama at its best in College Station.
You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm explaining this.
I don't know what you mean, because you're excusing Ohio State's loss, but not excusing Alabama's loss in the same way.
I'm not excusing
either.
Anything.
Excuse them both, or just admit that they both got beat.
I'm not excusing anything.
Plain and simple.
Like, Ohio State may get left out, and rightfully so if they do, for losing. But when you watch the way that Ohio State lost that game early on in the season, and you see the way that A&M won the Alabama game, there was a clear difference in feel of the way that those games were going.
I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. We'll see how it goes.
I do know that one team actually had a chance to win at the end, and that was Alabama. Ohio State never really had a chance to win that game.
Well, they had the ball down seven.
And they threw a pick.
With Yeah.
Alabama took the lead, came back and took the lead.
Yeah. You know, maybe I'm just wrong.
I'm not excusing it.
Yeah.
I just think you should view Alabama's loss to A&M and Ohio State's loss to Oregon the same. They lost.
Yeah, maybe that's right.
So there's no excuse for it. They should not have lost. Neither one of those teams should have lost that game. But they did. So here's the other thing. The way Ohio State played against Penn State, and you may be right, it may just be a Penn State thing, but I look at the Oregon game and the Penn State game, and I go, you know what? I'm not entirely sure they can beat Michigan State. Maybe they do. And I'm going to have to eat some crow because I was the one teasing Michigan State fans who were like, oh, it's time to, where are we going to be in the playoff? And I'm like, what, did they erase the Ohio State game from your schedule? You're not going to the playoff.
But like, you believe in your heart that Ohio State might lose to Michigan State?
They might.
Well, you can make a lot of money because that spread's going to be like 17 points.
Okay.
Like, that's like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm like a spread person.
What was the spread on the 2015 Ohio State Michigan State game?
You know, I don't recall, but I think it was like 7.
Okay. Who won the game?
Yeah, and Michigan State won with their backup. I'm not saying that they can't lose.
Ohio State was a lot better than Michigan State that year. This isn't Ohio State, Michigan. That's a different scenario. For whatever reason, they get more up for that.
For whatever, so, yeah. Yeah, Ohio State gets Michigan State at home. So, but yeah, the thing about this is with the Big Ten is that we'll get the opportunity of parsing through a lot of this. Whereas the Big 12 and Cincinnati, like if you think Michigan State is going to win, and I don't think that's possible, it doesn't matter what we think because we're going to get the result.
Right. Because they're going to play the game and we'll know what happens.
Whatever happens, happens.
Right. Exactly.
And let me ask you another thing about the Big Ten.
And I feel like Alabama has enough good opponents left that it's the same thing. Like if Alabama finishes the season 12, if Alabama's 12-1, they're the SEC champ, they've beaten Georgia. They are in. There is no question about that. And if Alabama loses another game, they're out. So we don't have to worry. We can yell about it. People can complain about it. It doesn't really matter where Alabama is ranked because they will either go 12-1 and be in, or they will be either 10-2 regular season because they lost the Iron Bowl and not even make the SEC championship game, or they will be 11-2. After losing to Georgia in the SEC championship game, and they'll be out.
Let me hit you with another curveball here. Well, we're on the Big Ten East, and we're saying that anything can happen on the field, and it will. Michigan miraculously wins out. They're in, right?
Oh, yeah.
So they're in the top 10 still, in your mind.
That's fine. I don't have an argument. Look, if we both think Michigan State is as high as we've ranked them, Michigan was 4 points away from them on the road and statistically dominated the game.
Yeah, I'm not so with you really on Michigan State, though. I have Michigan State based on resume and deserving. I don't believe in my heart that they're a top 7 team nationally.
No, I don't. I don't necessarily either. But listen, Ari, you and I watched that game today. We actually did the live watch. The Staples
that was really
cast.
Fun, by the way.
It was, and we're going to do it for some other big games as we go through the season. But, and again, this is not analytical by any means. It is just me watching that team commit a couple bad turnovers, go down, find a way to claw back, go down again, have trouble getting a stop over and over and over again, and still find a way to win. Still score when you need to score and find a way to win against an opponent that was pretty good.
I also think, too, that having a really good, outstanding offensive skill weapon makes you more sexy. Like,
yeah, Kenneth Walker has now Jalen Naylor injury. Jalen Naylor's in a cast at the end of the game. I do worry about that because he's obviously a great big play threat. You know, he's... he's one you always have to worry about when he's on the field because he can take you deep pretty much every time. That doesn't bode well for the future. But Kenneth Walker looked unstoppable at the end of that game.
Yeah, and I actually had a pit in my stomach about Michigan because, buddy, they should have won that game. Like they
played really well.
In my opinion, they played really well.
You weren't on when the call came down, the did he fumble or was he down call. I thought he fumbled. I thought he was laying on top of the tackler when Thorne lost the ball. Everybody
you
else
mean on the recovery,
was down. He was down.
The recovery before halftime in the end zone?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I thought this touchdown. That's a 4-point swing. That's your game.
I'm actually surprised that they overturned it because the call on the field was a touchdown, wasn't it?
Call on the field was a touchdown, and it really if you think his shin was down, then great. You agree with what they ended up deciding. I couldn't see that. It looked to me like his whole body basically was laying on top of the guy who tackled him.
Yeah.
And then he ball gets jarred out and Hutchinson grabs it and it's a touchdown. So that's the only thing that I would quibble with. But that said, look, there are calls every game that go against both teams. Michigan State showed a lot of resiliency winning that game.
It's hard to be the
ref
guy.
There were a bunch of times they could. We kept, you and I kept saying, like, every time they get the ball, well, they got to score here or it's over. And then they do it.
It's really hard to be the ref guy because stuff happens in every game. Did you see the way that the Iowa State game lost, the way Iowa State lost today?
Yeah.
That fumble that they called Breece Hall going into the end zone, it was a touchdown. They called it a fumble and West Virginia won. And it was just like, stuff happens. You know what I mean? Michigan had every opportunity though to win that football game. You're up 16 points in the second half. You're physically done.
Crying for Michigan because I disagreed with that call. I think they had every chance to win. I'm just impressed with Michigan State. I'm just impressed with the way they kept coming back. And I think that's the type of team that can give. And also, just Mel Tucker's only in year three as a head coach. He seems to have the ability to really get his team up for the biggest games from what we've seen so far. So,
yeah. And it's like also the joke of when does it stop being a coincidence with Harbaugh? It's just like, can he just get a signature win? It's just like, they had it there. It was a rivalry game. I know it means a lot to people in Michigan. You know, they did everything that they were supposed to do this year. You know, the new staff, I think, has done a pretty good job. You have young 3-star prospects coming out and turning out to be
they
stars.
Were making explosive plays, Ari.
Plays. Everything that you wanted
exactly
to see.
Exactly what everyone was hoping Michigan could be.
And it's just like, and then here we are, you know? And it's just at a certain point, it's just like, I mean, if you sit here right now, Saturday, October 30th, 2021, and you look at Jim Harbaugh's entire tenure, what was the biggest, most exciting, significant moment? Can you even think of one?
Well, they beat Wisconsin this year.
Which, I mean, if beating
might
Wisconsin
actually turn
this
into
year,
a pretty good win by the end of the season, as
I know,
Wisconsin
but
keeps
if beating
seemingly
Wisconsin
getting better.
This year is the biggest win of the Harbaugh era.
I know. I know. I mean, I know. Like, and I think you and I agree on this. I think their standards or their aim should be a little higher. You seem to have resigned yourself to their aim is just, you know, be decent, get clobbered by Ohio State at the end of the year, and you're okay with that. I don't know that they're okay with that.
Well, the you know, as the kids like to say, the goalposts have changed. Because if you put yourself in the timeline of Michigan fanhood, when Harbaugh took the job, it was supposed to be another 10-year war between Urban and Jim.
Right.
The first few years, you had really good games. That 16 game was one of the best games I've ever seen with my own eyes. You know, you thought that you were going to have two perennial playoff contenders facing off in the last game in November every year. And then when they started losing these games, after year 4 or 5, people were upset when Jim Harbaugh wasn't winning the big game. And the thing about Michigan was, will they ever be the national championship contender that we thought that they would be during the satellite camp, sleepover, climbing trees, playing football with kids era? And then what they were at 10-2 wasn't enough at that time. Then last year happened, and it was a complete dumpster fire. Harbaugh changes his contract, which I respect, and I respect the hell out of that. does the right stuff, gets a new staff.
I don't think there's another coach in America that would do that.
But last year was a disaster. So he comes back, and now he has returned Michigan to what they were for the first 5 years. And then you and I would both agree that even if they do lose to Ohio State and finish 10-2, that Harbaugh saved his job. But then he's now saved his job by doing the thing that wasn't enough 3 years ago. So now we're in this weird dynamic of, well, is that enough? Is 10-2 the thing that's going to keep Jim Harbaugh the head coach at Michigan for the next 10 years? Or is making the playoff the standard there? And I think I would argue that going 10-2, starting off 7-0, getting your fans excited, playing close games with Michigan State, and then losing by two or three touchdowns by Ohio State is like the peak ceiling of that program, which I don't think it should be. But the longer you keep, I think we have enough information from Jim Harbaugh and his resume to understand that his ceiling is 10-2. I don't know that I have any confidence that it's ever going to be better than that. So you have two choices.
All right. I don't want to stop here, but I have to. Have you been watching the BYU-Virginia game?
I have. It was over on that 900.
BYU started this game winning 21-0 7 minutes into the game. It is currently 42-38 Virginia as the teams are walking into the locker room for halftime.
Yeah, and I think Virginia just like went on a huge touchdown drive right before half with like 40 seconds left. They drove the length of the field.
Brennan Armstrong has in the second quarter basically put up the numbers for an entire game. It is incredible. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Are there other one-loss teams out there that we don't think are very good? Your favorite team today did what they always do, so they're out.
That's right. Pitt is
sorry to,
Pitt's
sorry
out.
To break that to you.
So Notre Dame is a one-loss team, but I do think they're just so handcuffed to Cincinnati. They can never be above Cincinnati. So 11-1, Notre Dame is not getting into the playoff.
Yeah, and the problem with Notre Dame, too, is that, you know, not being in a conference, I think you have to be undefeated. But the other problem with Notre Dame, and maybe the Wisconsin win will turn out to be better and better as you go on, but if you look at their schedule, you got Florida State, Wisconsin, Cincinnati, Virginia Tech, USC, UNC, Virginia, Georgia Tech, and Stanford. Like, if half of those teams ended up being as good as we thought they were going to be, that would be one hell of a schedule. But the fact of the matter is that they've won a bunch of games against teams with sexy helmets that aren't very good. So I don't know if like they would have a signature win, and then you can make the case with Notre Dame that the one time they played a playoff team, they lost, and they lost at home. So they're in a bad spot.
I got one more team. There's one more.
Who am I forgetting?
Undefeated Wake Forest.
That's right.
If Wake Forest goes 13-0 and wins the ACC, they're making the playoff. I'm telling you that right now. They're making the playoff if they go 13-0 win the ACC.
Isn't Wake Forest's schedule really backloaded, though? Like, their toughest games all come at the end, at North Carolina, NC State, at Clemson, at BC. That's a tough four-game stretch. So if they do it, and then they win the ACC championship, and they win those five games, that's earning it. You know, I don't think that anybody would – even if they do that, I don't think I would think they were the four best teams. But at a certain point, you go back by what somebody's earned, and then they would have earned it at that point. Where would you rank them in your playoff? Would you put them at like 10?
I put them at 8 probably.
Get an undefeated Power 5 team.
Yeah. Now, they've had some close calls, but I don't know. It's hard to deny that they just keep winning. Now, obviously, if they lose, they're going to plummet. But if they keep winning, you're right, they'll have earned it. Because their schedule, their strength of schedule, even if the ACC is as down as we think it is this year, their strength of schedule will still be much better than Cincinnati's.
Yeah, you know what is just kind of interesting too? Who is the biggest Cinderella party crasher of the playoff era? Would you say Michigan State in 15? Was it Washington when they made it?
It wasn't Washington, because that Washington team was good. Like, we went in there expecting them to win the Pac-12. I think it's Michigan State, just because that Ohio State team coming off a national title, bringing back almost everybody, was viewed as unstoppable, and they beat them. And then, of course, the Cinderella story ends with Michigan State getting its doors blown off by Alabama in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah. It would be really cool if one year we got a legitimate college football Cinderella. It's never happened.
Well, we're going to get that when the playoff expands. And
no, I know, but in four, it's different. It's different with four.
Yeah, so Greg Sankey, by the way, did what I thought he was going to do and poured cold water all over this eight-team talk. The SEC is either – their whole thing is stay at four or go to 12. We know that's how Notre Dame feels. We know that's how all the Group of Five conferences feel. So really it comes down to the members of the alliance and what they want to do. If you're – and in the Big 12, obviously. If you are the Big 12, I think you want it bigger. You want it as big as possible. If you're the Pac-12, you should want it bigger. The Big 10, you don't necessarily want it bigger, but you probably should, because there are going to be years where you can get three, four teams in. And the ACC, eight would be perfect for the ACC. Like, they'd love to just get their champ in every year. There are not going to be a lot of years where they'd get another one in. Although, let's say Florida State got back to being Florida State. Maybe they could. Let's say Miami suddenly got great. They could. I don't know. I don't think it matters, because it's one of those things where it has to be unanimous, but if the MAC says they don't want to do it, no one cares what the MAC thinks. If the SEC says they don't want to do it, you can't have the playoff without the SEC. So you're it's going to be 4 or 12, so it's going to be 12.
Andy, I think we forgot another team.
Who do we forget?
Baylor?
Okay. No, I think, okay, that's a good point, because if Baylor wins out, which would probably mean beating Oklahoma twice, then I think Baylor would have a good shot at being in there. Their loss is at Oklahoma State, which, you know, I think by the end of the season, Oklahoma State's going to have a real nice record. That's not going to be a disqualifying loss. So I think you may be right about that.
I mean, I think that they're a team that controls their own destiny. And that's all that you have to be in the conversation. I think it would be bad if we didn't mention them.
No, I'm glad you did. I agree. I think Baylor, Dave Aranda's done an incredible job this year. Jeff Grimes is one of the best coordinator hires of the offseason. We don't know what they're going to be, and we'll find out when they play Oklahoma on November 13th. Now, They may end up playing them again, even if they lose to them. But it'll be interesting. Now, they've got TCU in free fall next. Can we migrate out of the playoff discussion and into maybe some coaching carousel discussion, Ari?
Sure, absolutely.
Now, a lot of us chatted about this internally this week at The Athletic, and we've brought this up on the podcast several times, especially me when Max Olson's here, because I keep asking, Is Gary Patterson done at TCU? And I always present that with the caveat of Gary Patterson will get a chance to decide if he's done at TCU, because it's really hard for them to fire him given everything he's done for the program. But at this point, I think it's probably time for them to begin. I think they probably already started trying to convince Gary Patterson that it's time to hang it up, take like a special assistant to the president job, and just ride out in the sunset, because it's not going to get any better for them.
You know, I wrote their state of the program this year, and I think he's just like a very interesting dude. And I don't know, how many state of the programs did you do?
I did four.
Of the four that you did, how many of the teams did you go in not knowing much about, did you leave believing could be pretty good?
None. Now, I had some teams that I thought were going to be, like Liberty, I thought was going to have a good record this year. They've actually wound up being worse than I thought they would be because they lost to Syracuse. Florida State, I didn't think was going to be very good. Maybe I only did three. Mississippi State, I thought was going to be better, but it was going to be hard to figure out where the wins would come from. And that's kind of what's happened because they've got two great wins. Three if you count NC State, but they've beaten Texas A&M and they've beaten Kentucky now. They are clearly a much better team than they were last year, and they're still going to have to fight like hell to make a bowl game.
Yeah, maybe I'm just susceptible to getting macked. I don't know.
You got garried?
I don't know if I got garried. I didn't get garried. He was awesome to talk to. I enjoyed my hour with him. But
he's very entertaining to talk to, but here's the thing. Go ask to talk to one of his assistants. Go ask to talk to one of his best players. You won't get to.
No, I understand. Yeah.
And that was one of the issues that popped up this week where, you know, the thought is, you know, and I would use this against him in recruiting. Like if I'm Dave Aranda or if I'm whoever gets the Texas Tech job, I go, great, you want to go to TCU? Okay, they'll never let you do an interview, even if you're the best player on the team. And if you want NIL deals, well, they're going to hide you as much as possible.
Yeah.
And we're not. We're going to present you in the best possible light.
It's super interesting because it's kind of maybe inside baseball. But before I move on to what I'm going to say next, I wanted to say that looking at TCU's roster, what they had coming back, Zach Evans, a quarterback that, you know, I thought Duggan was going to be pretty good. Like they have guys. I thought in the Big 12 that they could have had a chance to compete for the Big 12 championship game, especially considering the fact that they've always traditionally played Texas very tough. And they did again this year. But the bottom's fallen out. But the thing I wanted to say about the NIL stuff is, and again, kind of inside baseball, but college football media access is not like the NFL. And I don't know if people realize this. In the NFL, you can go into a locker room and talk to anybody. In college, you're susceptible.
Not right now. Once COVID restrictions lift. Yeah.
Yes, COVID be damned. In college, you are very much subject to what the SID and the head coach will allow you to do.
And usually the head coach.
Yeah. And the head coach is usually the one telling the SID how it's going to go. In a world where players now can profit greatly from their name, image, and likeness, I think media availability and the potential to show off your personality and to be somebody that the fans know is extremely valuable from a monetary standpoint. And I'm very curious to see as this continues to evolve and these players start to cash in on deals and make some money, rightfully so, in the way that they're able to, how that's going to evolve in terms of who's talking to the media and these rules. Like Oklahoma, for instance, has a no freshman talk. I don't think Caleb Williams has spoken to the media yet.
Right.
And it's just like how much money. And you could just say, well, he's going to be the star of Oklahoma next year. He'll get his money.
I don't think that's necessarily costing him money because I think if you're at a program where you win most of the time, like that stuff's going to come to you anyway.
Just an example that came up in my head. How many other freshmen around the country?
The issue is when you're at a program, and like Gary Patterson, that style is fine if you are winning most of the time. If you're winning 10, 11 games a year, you can manage the program pretty much however you want. Nobody's going to say boo to you. But if you're going to be bad, well, yeah, every little thing you do is going to get criticized. And what if Caleb Williams is the funniest guy
you've ever met? He's like the coolest, funniest guy. You've never.
Caleb Williams is already getting NIL deals because he's the quarterback at Oklahoma.
But their fans don't know his personality. And I think that matters to some extent.
Oh, I think it can go into the stratosphere if you're a really good player with a great personality. But like at TCU, they're not necessarily looking to TCU for guys. So you've got to find a way to stand out.
To promote
it. TCU. Yeah. And like Zach Evans has talked once this year. So I don't blame Zach Evans if he's mad about that. And the thing about Gary is if you're winning 10, 11 games, you can do that. You can not make your assistants available. You can, like Nick Saban doesn't make his assistants available. You know what? Nick Saban wins every game pretty much. So he can do whatever he wants. Gary's not winning enough to do whatever he wants. And he's got a staff that it's, you know, all his guys. They really haven't evolved much at all. And they're in a situation where they're going to be a bottom tier Big 12 team every single year unless something changes. And so they have to decide if that's what they want to do or not.
Yeah, and it's always tricky too when you get into a situation where you're dealing with legendary coach who's been there forever and transformed the program.
Who has made you, who you so are. Much more than what you were. And that's, I mean, that's the thing. I still have a really hard time believing that Jeremiah Donati, the AD there, could go say, Gary Patterson, we're not bringing you back next year. Like, I just don't see that. I feel like it has to be something mutual, or it's, you know, Gary just coaches some more. And because he's earned the right to go out on his terms. But the problem is, how much longer, if you're in charge of TCU, can you let him keep going?
Yeah, and if you're Gary, he's a very eccentric person. He likes scuba diving and making songs and doing things that, you know, his other interests. So maybe it'll be easier to convince him if and when that time comes. But looking at the roster that they had back,
the time has come.
Looking at the roster that they had back and the guys they have, you know, losing to SMU, Texas, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Kansas State is just not what I thought this team was going to be this year. And the fact of the matter is they still have to play Baylor at Oklahoma State and at Iowa State. I mean, this team could lose 8 games this year. And if you would have told me at the beginning of the year that they were going to lose 8, I would have bet anything that that wouldn't happen.
No, it's gotten bad. And now you've already brought up the when does it stop being a coincidence.
I'm happy that the coach we talk about that's become a mantra on this podcast and warms my heart.
Well, it should. I think it works very well, and we gotta hit it again because the original discussion was about Nebraska when that came up a couple weeks ago. Nebraska lost to Purdue. I realized they had an onside kick there at the end, and we're still in it. You can talk about the close losses all you want, but Ari, this team has lost to Illinois. This team has lost to Minnesota. This team has lost to Purdue. This team does not look capable of making a bowl game. At what point does it stop being an effing coincidence?
A month ago.
So what do you do if you are a new Nebraska AD Trev Alberts? How do you handle this situation?
I mean, maybe not a month ago. A month ago they beat Northwestern by 100.
52-7.
Then they played Michigan very closely the following week. And they played Minnesota pretty closely. It was a terrible loss at that time, but Minnesota's actually sneaky kind of good. Minnesota's won 4 in a row, and they're 6-2. I have no idea how that team lost to Bowling Green, but alas, it's college football. But
unless Iowa's slide continues unabated, and they're just terrible by the time they play Nebraska, Nebraska's going to go 3-9.
Yeah. Yeah. Ohio State, Wisconsin, Iowa is their last 3. That's not a good way to close out the year. I don't know, man. I just don't know. What do you do? How quickly can you give up on the savior of your program?
Well, he's not.
You know.
We already know that.
Well, I mean, Michigan's having a really hard time giving up on their savior.
Yeah, because he's 7-1 right now.
No, I know.
He's 7-1.
It wasn't last year. I mean, he coached a team that gave up on him last year.
Truly awful year, though.
No, I know. I'm using Michigan as an example.
Nebraska's never even been good under Frost.
I'm using Michigan as an example because the thought and the connection that you have to a coach who has ties or is an alum of the university that he's coming to save. There's an emotional connection there, not just from the fans, but from, you know, and I get it's a new AD, but it's a little bit different to move on from somebody like that than it would be if he never went to Nebraska and he wasn't viewed the way that he was when he got hired. So like, to me, I think that being that person, if you remember how Nebraska felt when they hired Frost, buys you an extra year than he would have if he was just another hire. Like, he would have been fired.
This is the extra year, Ari.
Yeah, I know.
We're in the extra year.
I mean, is he going to get fired? We fired him week one.
Yeah. We rehired him. We got roped in too when they played Michigan close, when they played Oklahoma close.
Yeah, but the standard there became.
Caleb Williams had been starting for Oklahoma when they played.
Yeah.
How would we look at that game?
It's like funny though. The standard at Nebraska turned into, oh my God, they have a pulse.
Well, and that's the problem. They need to decide what they want to be, and they need to work to correct it. But this is going to be a pretty active coaching carousel. There's gonna be a lot of people on the move. They just have to decide if they want to take part in it. There's nothing at this point that convinces you anything will be any better. Nothing.
I'm out. I told you I was out 2 weeks ago.
Now, there's another place where the fans are pretty much out on the guy, but I still think he's perfectly safe unless something crazy happens in the last 4 weeks of the season. So we talked about Georgia in relation to the cocktail party. Dan Mullen started Anthony Richardson, which is what all the fans wanted, which is what I said he should do, which is what a lot of people said he should do. It was not good. Richardson had a horrible game, threw a couple bad interceptions, had a fumble in the red that gave Georgia the ball in the red zone.
Does Richardson being not that good in the game help you give Mullen a second wind? Like, I almost like vindicated him.
It does somewhat, but there's also the level of frustration where the fans are going to go, yeah, but if you'd started Emory, it would have been just as bad.
Yeah.
The loss would have been just as bad.
Also, they played Georgia, so I don't know if putting that on Richardson is fair, like for his coming out party, you know, but it's not like he came out and saved Florida.
Here's who you might be able to put it on. And this is where the fans are going to try to put it on Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen got asked after the game about the talent level between Florida and Georgia. And he said, well, we were more talented last year. We won the game and they were more talented this year. And then he turned the question back on the reporter and said, well, what do you think about it? And the reporter was like, do you really want me to answer that? And then it's all the conversation sort of died on the vine. I don't know who asked Kirby Smart this. I sense it was probably someone who covers Florida. Maybe I'm wrong. To get this very quote from Kirby Smart that Florida fans will be throwing back in Dan Mullen's face for the next however many months. And Ari, this is basically your mission statement.
Tattoo it
that Kirby
me.
Smart is saying. And the next time we lose a bet, or the next time you lose a bet, I think you're going to have to get it tattooed in its entirety on your left butt cheek. So
what about on my chest by my heart?
That maybe that's better. I just was going for, you know, there's the butt cheek gives you room and, you know, this is probably going to have to be in cursive. I'm just saying. Here we go.
Where does that sort of mindset to always sort of be recruiting come from? And why do you think you have so much success with it?
You have to. I mean, guys, if you don't recruit, there's no coach out there that can out-coach recruiting, okay? I don't care who you are. The best coach to ever play the game better be a good recruiter because no coaching is going to out-coach players. I mean, anybody will tell you our defense is good because they got good players. So spending time on the phone, you know, spending time with people at your house, spending time with people when they come to your campus. You know, I'm not with my family when I'm doing that. My family sacrifices so that I can go and spend time with other people's families so that we have good players. So, you know, that's 25% evaluation. That's 50% recruiting. And another 25% is going to be coaching. But if you don't recruit, guys, you got no chance. Just go look. Look at the best teams out there. They got good football players. And that's the reason I believe in recruiting. And I believe you better always be recruiting. Always be recruiting because – if you're not, somebody else is.
I'm pretty sure that is a direct subtweet to Dan Mullen right there.
Andy, I think I said that quote verbatim on this podcast 9.1 million times.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And look, I did a column on Florida going into the Georgia game last week and kind of took a page from your book. I looked at the talent composite on 24/7 and one, you know, was number two Georgia was number two, Florida was number seven. You're like, okay, number two and number seven. But then I started doing the math on it. The cumulative distance in terms of where guys were ranked between Florida and Georgia is basically the same cumulative distance between Michigan and Ohio State. And we all know how that game usually turns out.
I'm going to say something, and I'm not sure I should say it, but I'm going to say it because it's a podcast and it's fun.
Okay.
My entire mantra at The Athletic and as a national reporter that is making his way past a beat reporter is stars matter. I write about recruiting incessantly. I talk about it incessantly. Maybe even some people are annoyed by it. But I have somehow manifested a brand saying something that is so incredibly obvious, I almost feel like a con man.
But you're not, because people want to believe in their heart of hearts that if you're gritty enough and you work hard enough, you can overcome a lack of God-given talent. And I am here to tell you, as a former SEC team walk-on, that you're not. You're just not.
Do people think that that Kirby Smart quote is insightful?
No. What I think that people think about that Kirby Smart quote is Florida fans want someone to say that, want someone in his position to say that, so that they can throw it at their coach when they're mad at him.
If you're a head coach
mad at him right now
at Florida, or you're a head coach at Northwestern or Baylor or Oregon State or Ohio State or any other place, and you don't understand that, you're not doing your job.
But the difference in caliber of player that you need to be able to bring in to be successful at Baylor and at Northwestern is different than the caliber of player that you
absolutely
need to be able to bring in at Florida.
True.
It is true. But here's the thing. You've got a coach who was very successful at a different SEC institution that plays at a relatively different level.
Yeah, and I
the
think
the question
that,
was,
yeah,
can he recruit at the level required to be successful to meet the standard at Florida?
Which is what makes the coaching discussion so interesting, because I think that overachieving at a middle tier program with far fewer expectations than a national powerhouse is a different job than coaching a national powerhouse.
There you go. That's what I was hoping you'd get to. That's what I was hoping you'd say. You're exactly right. And here's the problem.
Which is why I don't think I'd want to hand Mark Stoops the LSU job.
Right. And this is not a shot at Dan Mullen, nor is it a shot at Mark Stoops. You just don't know when of course you're going to try to hire somebody from that spot, because they've shown that they know how to win football games. They know how to organize a program. They know how to evaluate talent. They know how to scheme it up. The thing you don't know is, can they recruit at the highest level? And you don't know until they have to try to do that. And then once they try to do it, you know. But unfortunately, if it turns out they can't, you're stuck with them.
Well, this is why building or coaching hires is such an impossible thing to do. And I feel, you know, that's why they pay millions and millions of dollars for search firms that don't even know what they're doing. And because it's just like, because you built a middle tier program into a moderately more successful program than it was before, doesn't make you qualified to coach at Florida. You right, just have, but it's also
but
the prereq
who,
that you need to get
qualified.
Hired.
Like think back to who they interviewed. They offered the job to Chip Kelly. He took UCLA. They talked to Scott Frost, and I think both parties mutually agreed that they didn't want each other. And then they hired Dan Mullen. All of those three would have been considered home runs the moment they were hired. I think of the three, they certainly hired the right one, because I think Dan Mullen would have been the most successful of those three at Florida, and has been successful at Florida generally.
And Mullen has urban ties, so I understand that too.
Right. But that's the thing. Chip Kelly would have failed miserably at Florida. Scott Frost would have failed miserably at Florida. But at the time, everybody's like, you got to hire that guy. And Listen, I'm guilty of it too.
So let me ask you this.
I thought Scott Frost would be a home run anywhere.
This is interesting to me. So I covered Jeff Hafley at Ohio State my last year on the beat.
Ah, he's the next one that everybody thinks is a slam dunk.
But Jeff Hafley, though he's recruiting at Boston College at a higher level than Boston College has typically recruited, he is a handsome, smooth, personable dude that can get you to believe in him in 5 minutes. And sometimes I wonder if personality and the ability to publicly and outwardly express the importance of recruiting at the highest level is almost more important than showing that you could build a middle tier program when you're putting somebody in that position. Because a lot of times, Andy, these programs that we're talking about, the Alabamas, the Floridas, the top 10,
LSU,
these USC. Places for the most part can recruit on autopilot. Like Florida could hire anybody and they could recruit a top 15 class every year. What you need to do is you need to find...
They don't have one this year, currently, in 2022.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. But if you hire somebody with the right personality who gets it, I almost feel like that's more important than years of doing really well at Mississippi State. And I feel like you have to just find somebody that will embrace it. And it's like I'm sitting here right now as we speak watching Washington. And I'll throw Jimmy Lake's butt on the hot seat right now.
Absolutely.
You're talking about a guy who got hired because of his recruiting prowess. Quote unquote recruiting prowess.
Right. And the thought was when Jimmy Lake got hired, and he kind of said this, is I'm going to go get, like, I understand the OKG concept, but I'm going to go get us some stars too. It hasn't really
come to fruition. Did you hear his quote on National Signing Day last year?
No.
I'm going to try to find it because I wrote a column about it. He basically said, we like our classes at Washington. The NFL tells us that we do a great job developing players. That's more important than anything that you can see on 247. Here's what it says. And this is from my story. I got an awesome text this morning from one of the GMs of the 32 teams, Lake said. He said, well, coach, you guys did it again. You have a bunch of guys that are about to get their names called early in the draft. Congratulations, you guys do it the right way. I just love when I see stuff like that. When you guys write our story about whatever signing class we sign in December, it's going to be awesome. We'll probably be like 15th place in the Pac-12 or something like that. We'll be dead last, and then we'll probably have half the guys get drafted and get developed and play a long time in the NFL. So I take pride in that, and our staff takes pride in that. That is the quote of a failure. Because that is a quote of somebody who dismisses the importance of accumulating stars and I don't mean stars like on paper and recruiting profiles. I mean like legitimate high school stars, like 3 5-star prospects in Seattle area and only landing one. And then to phrase it that way, as if the way you're doing it is working, and then to come out and put this clown show of a football team on the field when you're hired to recruit is a disconnect so abundantly clear to me that I would move on immediately. If I were the athletic director and I read that stuff, I would be personally offended by that.
The problem is most athletic directors aren't personally offended by that. They're like, all right, we're going to do it the right way.
That's not the right way. You're losing.
The right way is get as many good players as you can and try to develop them as best you can. And no, they don't do it the right way there. They did develop really well under Chris Peterson. You know who does it the right way? Nick Saban does it the right way.
Yeah, and guess what? Nick Saban develops players.
Right.
You know what the right way at Washington is?
Dabo Sweeney develops players.
The right way at Washington
through Urban Meyer and Ryan Day develop players.
The right way at Washington would have been to sign all 3 of the top 5 or the top 15 national prospects in the Seattle last year and develop them. Because as you know, you can develop players that don't have the God-given talent, as you put it. And even if they are developed and they turn into NFL players or middle round players, there is a lack of dynamic talent that you need to compete at the highest level. And we're talking about a team that made the playoff once in a conference that's very winnable and a coach that was hired because he was a very good recruiter. And to sit, I thought that was just a slap in the face to the fans, in my opinion.
Well, and that's everybody's criticizing Mario Cristobal for his game management. but I'll take his weaknesses and his strengths over the reverse of it.
It's like a recipe, Andy. Talent isn't the thing that you only need to win a national championship. But it's the dough of the pizza. You might not make a good pizza if you have great dough, but if you don't have great dough, you don't have a shot.
And in college football, you're right.
Yeah, you're guaranteed to not make a good pizza. In college football, if you don't have the talent, you don't have a shot. Now, in college football, if you get the talent, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done after you acquire that talent. But it's an ingredient that can't be done without. And there are too many coaches making $5 million a year who don't understand that.
Speaking of Mario Cristobal, by the way, Oregon finally torched somebody they're supposed to. I was a little worried about that when Colorado got it to 28-14, but then Oregon took off again. So, listen, that's what they should do. We're not going to pat them too hard on the back for this. Is sort of like when I'd make good grades and I'd go to my parents and be like, well, so-and-so gets $5 for every A. And my parents are like, it's your job to get A's. We're going to get mad if you get,
you know, A's. What I used to do, like, when I was a kid,
that's what Oregon is right now.
When I was a kid and I never got into any serious trouble, but like I had a speeding ticket problem, as you know, from the, when does it stop being a coincidence thing?
Mm-hmm.
And my parents used to get mad at me for doing bonehead teenager things. And whenever they would get super mad at me, I'd be like, well, it's not like I'm out selling drugs or I'm not getting arrested. Cut me some slack. And like, I wanted credit for not doing terrible things.
Yeah, you wanted credit for being a baseline decent human being.
Yes. And my parents would just be like, you think that we should pat you on the back because you don't sell drugs?
Right. Right. And that's the thing. The standards are higher at certain places. Places that aspire to national championships, be they Georgia, be they Florida, be they USC, be they Oregon, be they Oklahoma, be they LSU, you have to bring in the best players. Because if you don't, then you won't have any chance to compete for national championships and you will not be doing your job. And that is the crux of the matter. And so that Kirby Smart quote is going to get thrown around an awful lot between now and National Signing Day. Guaranteed.
And it should. It should.
Well, we will see what happens. This was a really fun week, Ari. Michigan State was awesome. Notre Dame, North Carolina was a pretty good back and forth. Penn State, Ohio State was exciting. Texas Baylor was fun to watch. You know, we haven't even talked about your being out on the horns, but you're done. They're dead to you. So we understand.
That. Yeah, Texas's loss today. Saturday to Baylor was like every other Big 12 loss. In command of the game, feel like you're going to win. Other team just nuts up and wins. Just like a close game. They're down by 7 in the fourth quarter with the ball. They don't get it done. Rinse, repeat. Same movie, same thing. I'm done. Until they do it, I'm done.
Well, you're going to be done for a little while, I think, because they really have sort of established a pattern. Like, they just completely shut it down in the second half. And I don't know. Like I've been saying for the last, I feel like, 4 or 5 years, maybe it's not the person, maybe it's the place. I don't know. Because I'm finding that I have no other way to explain around to. It.
That's the way you explain it to me. So,
yeah. So, Ari, we gave out our top whatevers. I'm sure everybody's going to take issue with that. I'm sure all of those people, if we turned the question around on them and they had to put out their top whatevers, we would take issue with it. The actual committee's meeting right now. They will reveal their rankings on Tuesday. We'll have a show immediately after that. And it's going to be, I don't know. I wonder if I'll be able to criticize anything at all, because I just sat here and said, I can't tell you how to separate 2 through 7, but we'll find out. And I'm just glad there are this many teams in the mix, because it feels a little different. It feels a little more robust, and I'll take it. Talk to you on Tuesday night.